podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Neil Docking, Siobhan Began and Mike Bankhall. Mike is yet again in some sort of glorious university facility. If you listen to this as a podcast, just imagine a man surrounded by great works of literature. Absolutely right the way up to the top of the screen. You've never seen the likes in your life. You've never seen anything as dramatic. Siobhan's in a back bedroom and Neil Docking finds himself beautifully framed with a picture to his left there. What's in that picture frame there, Neil? Is that some sort of film poster?
It's In the Heat of the Night.
Oh, it's a good film. Excellent stuff indeed.
For a day like this, actually.
A great film for a day like this. I am in the studio of the Anfield Wrap, absolutely buried in the Anfield Wrap basement, but looking forward to chatting to Mike, to Siobhan, and to Neil about a wide variety of things. We're going to put out for free the interview done with Jamie Farr about Nunes into the middle of this because we're all still Nunes excited. But a few minutes before we came on air, and afternoon to everyone who's coming in the comments, feel free to get them in as we go. A few minutes before we came on air, it was clear that Liverpool, it looks like, have got to a deal with Sadio Mane. 42.5 million, Neil Docking. That was always felt as though it was going to be where this was going to land if Liverpool were doing well out of it. 42.5 million. With 1 year left on his deal, do you think that's a fair fee?
Yeah, I do. Somewhat reluctantly.
Why are you reluctant?
I'm just sad to see Sadio go, really. Really sad to see him go. I mean, This sort of, you know, famous front three have brought us all the best days and nights of our lives, most of us as Liverpool supporters. And Sadio, for me, was the catalyst for it all. I can't really repeat anything that's not already been said about him. He's just an absolute street warrior, an incredibly gifted footballer to boot. He's got everything about him that you look for in a Liverpool player. And it felt like his comments around the Champions League final meant this was inevitable. And once you knew it was inevitable, then we just had to get a good fee and get the deal done. I'm glad that it's not dragged on right until the end of the summer. I don't think it would have helped anyone if he'd been going away with Jurgen training camps and taking part in friendlies. I think it's good the deal's done now. Obviously, we've already got his replacement in, if you like. We've got two possible replacements in for him already in Diaz and Nunes. And 42 million, yeah, it seems fair, I think. I think it's a fair price, and I'm just glad that it can all finish now and there's no more. I didn't want to get to the point where he was giving like Raheem Sterling style, Luis Suarez, you know, Mascherano holding me hostage style interviews. I'm glad we've avoided that sort of unpleasantness. And now we can all just say, you were brilliant. Thank you very much. All the best.
There is around this, Siobhan, that I like. The one thing I don't like really is watching a player go into decline. You know, I think you've got to be careful on that. It can sometimes be a bit painful to watch. But there is, obviously, it is going to be miserable and sad from a Liverpool perspective as the money does move on, because it's going to be hard to define this era. You know, it could well be, we could just be living in the Trent Alexander-Arnold era, and it's going to go on for 18 years, and it's going to be a remarkable career. It's possible that we're still defined by Mo Salah, that it's the Mo Salah era. It could be the Alisson Becker era. But the one I think who's got the strongest sort of pledge to it is Sadio Mane. He joins Liverpool. Liverpool aren't in the Champions League in the summer of 2016. The last game he ever plays for Liverpool, sadly, it's not a victorious one, but it's a Champions League final. And that's what he's been at the absolute centre of. And I think it's what he's been the catalyst of, along with the manager. The era is his as much as it's anyone else's.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as you've said, it's everybody's era, and arguably everyone would say it's just the Klopp era, isn't it? And that's that's what all this is. But if anyone kind of signified what that meant, it was Sadio. It's not just, you know, he was a pure engine, wasn't he, for so long. I'm saying it as if he's like with the angles now or something like that, but like he's like, he was such an engine to so much, and he was such a personality. And I'm sad about it, timing of it, because I thought we had his character in the last 6 months-ish. I thought we saw him really come out of himself in the last 6 months, and I find that really sad. But I hope it's not the Mane era. I hope that this doesn't nod.
Oh, there could be a new one with someone else, the new name. Yeah,
I think that as everybody said, as Neil said, that, you know, I'm glad it hasn't. I'm also glad it hasn't rumbled on to a point where we thought he might stay. You know, that kind of middle ground of, oh, well, you haven't been able to do it yet. And the cleanliness of this is very soothing and not very, it does, you know, we've all been through it, haven't we, with so many transfers in and out in the past. Like the neuroses it makes you develop in your mind about like what's going to happen, the uncertainty, the you know, the fear for what's to come. And I think that we're all really sad to leave him, see him go. if he wants another challenge, then he wants another challenge. You know that it's his decision to make, and you want him to go with the absolute with the best of everyone's well wishes. And I think that, as Neil said, you know, without the histrionics of what could come later is the only way to do that. And I thought that it was potentially heading that way with some of the comments around, you know, oh, the people of Senegal want me to go, so I'll go, kind of thing. I think if we got into that territory much further, it would have been really it would have given me the ick. But I'm glad it's not, and I'm glad that our business is tied up before that. I think it makes us all feel a little bit more steady, a little bit more centered.
There is within this, for me, Mike, it's not about a season. For me, Sadio Mane has one of the best calendar years any Liverpool player has ever had. One of the most important calendar years any Liverpool player has ever had. You know, he, as an example to run through, is 2019, and I'm sure you'll have a couple of other examples yourself. He scores what is a hugely important and decisive goal up against Bayern Munich. In fact, he gets two that night. You know, he gets the goal to make it 1-0 up. It's a brilliant goal. He gets the next one in there as well. It's absolutely hugely important from a Liverpool point of view. He gets a massive goal against Chelsea in the running of that season. He scores against Porto. He's the only one of the classic front three on the pitch for the game against Barcelona, the legendary game against Barcelona. Moving forward into the next season, gets a massive goal against Southampton at a time when that wasn't looking great. Scores and wins the penalty against Leicester in October of 2019. And then a few weeks later, gets the goal against Villa. Scores against Manchester City. Scores against Crystal Palace. Scores the only goal in the 1-0 win over Wolves. Is great against Everton in the derby. That calendar year where Liverpool win the Champions League and de facto win the league and win the World Championships is one of the greatest calendar years any Liverpool player has ever had.
It really is. When you think about Sadio Mane, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. How decisive he was in 2019. To kind of use an Anfield rapism, no one wanted to win the league more than Sadio Mane in 2019.
Yep.
He was the one that drove us to that league title. And when you think about Sadio Mane, one of the things I usually think about is how decisive he is during the running. So during the running in 2019 for the Champions League and for the league when we're going against City, he's the attacker we're relying on the most to get us a big goal, to provide the kind of big performances. At the start of the 2019-2020 season, he's the attacker that we're relying on the most in terms of the big goals, the big moments. You speak about Southampton, there's a Leicester performance at Anfield, which is just out of this world. It's outstanding, that performance. The Villa performance, he drags over the line in that game too. And Mane is always decisive in the sort of running periods of the season. Even the season just gone, Mane moves to centre forward and is our best attacker from February onwards. He's our most decisive attacker. He scores against Villarreal home and away. He scores against Benfica. He scores some important goals in Premier League. Obviously, Wolves wasn't as important as we would have liked it to be, but he scores in that last game of the season. So he's the one we're always looking to in those big, big moments. And that is Sadio Mane. Sadio Mane, since he joined the club, has been a decisive footballer, has been an important footballer. If you look at his first season, he scores not just one of the great debut goals, one of the greatest ever Liverpool goals in his first game. He comes on his left foot and smashes it top corner. That is Sadio Mane. He's the most decisive forward I feel like we've had in a long, long time. And that 2019 calendar year, I can't think of many calendar years that come near that. Maybe Gerrard 2006, maybe Suarez 2013 or 2014, but it's an outrageous calendar year, and it is Sadio Mane at his absolute best.
It's
Just come in on that, the goal against Arsenal. The goal against Arsenal, that's like one of the, that is an era defining goal because it launches an era. You know, when Xabi Alonso scores the great goal at Anfield against Arsenal under Rafa, you know, in the 2-1, and Alonso scores, and it's the first sign, really. It's a symbol of what's coming under Benitez. And I felt that was similar. The one against Arsenal, I was on holiday in Cyprus. It's a where were you moment. I remember sitting in a bar in Cyprus, and Mane scores that goal, runs to the manager, and it's like, whoa, look at what we could be. Look at what we've got here, what we're going to do. And Mane led all of that. You mentioned the World Club Championship, you know, kicking up a fight, do you remember, with Robertson, you know, getting into a brawl with that lad. That left-hand side, Robertson, Wijnaldum and Mane, I think is about as perfectly a balanced a flank as I've ever seen. Fight, skill, determination. And Mane was the leader of that.
Within all of this then, Neil, you know, he will be a loss. I think we did begin to see some decline in the first half of the season just gone. I feel a little as though, you know, I don't want to in the same way that, for instance, I feel as though some of the praise around Diaz has gone a teeny bit overboard in the second half of the season, just a teeny bit. I'm so excited to watch him. Can't wait to watch him again play for Liverpool. I also feel as though there were some big moments and some big performances from Mane at number nine, but I do feel as though I loved him there. I loved what he could be there, but it didn't quite manage to tie everything together. And that might be a couple of other individual performances, individual issues, some players misfiring, but it never quite settled as we'd ideally like, I think, over the course of the campaign. This isn't to rewrite history by any stretch of the imagination, because I love him there and I think he's got a real future there for Bayern Munich. I think he's going to be a great number nine for Bayern Munich. I just wonder whether or not week in, week out with the Premier League and little bits and pieces, it might work for him. You know, do you feel the timing is okay, Nunes in, or do you just think you never want to see the great ones go? And for me, this is the first great one. You've mentioned Wijnaldum, and I love Genie, but for me, this is the first great one that's going. We all love Lallana. Some of us liked the big dog, Dexy Lovren, but I never want to see the great ones go.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously Divock Origi has preceded all of this, but no, being serious, yeah, I think he's the first great player of the Klopp era to move on. He did have an inconsistent season last season as well. You know, the sort of COVID season that we've all just consigned to the dustbin. He struggled that year at times. And then, like you say, first half of this season, he's not quite as explosive as he once was, perhaps. A lot of his goals now are, you know, like six-yard efforts, penalty box efforts as well. When he used to have, you know, the early days, that ability to cut in from wide and fire in from angles and from distance. Quite so much of that. But even in the wake of the Champions League final, you know, I was saying I wasn't entirely sure about the chemistry of this new front three of Diaz, Mane and Salah. For me, it was a little bit off. The connection wasn't quite right. I would have loved to have seen Bobby more involved in the final if it could have been possible, because I just didn't think the link up between even Mane and Salah, who've played together for so long, with him in the central role, it didn't feel like a natural fit to me. So I do think it is a good time. It's not to say, as you say, it's not to say he won't be great for Bayern. I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll score an unbelievable amount of goals, and I'm sure they'll love him. But I do think the timing is probably just about right for us. With Diaz coming in, who obviously needs work, he needs time with Klopp to understand what we do and to fit into our patterns and systems of play, and the same with Nunes. No, it feels right to me.
Do you think with him, Siobhan, because he's decided, I think, you know, and obviously Bayern Munich are remunerating him for his services quite spectacularly, but do you think with him he will sort of retain the idea of being a Liverpool great? Because that's important for me, and that's important for all these lads. I don't really want him to go to Bayern Munich, win four Bundesligas and two Champions League, and he becomes their player. Like, I'm always like, let them stay as ours. I want him on our road shows forever. I want him going back, you know, going back home, and he's being asked questions about his Liverpool days when he's 48, not his Bayern Munich days. That's what, and I think that because of the journey he's been part of, I think that will be the case. Bayern Munich win the Bundesliga every year anyway, but I want him to be Liverpool Sadio Mane. That's what I want more than anything.
I think so too, because no one can question he's had his best days here. And, you know, he's probably still got great days in him, but just the sheer amount of them he's had here, you know, what is it, six years? You know, and all of them great in their own way, you know. and it, as you said, you can go and win the Bundesliga every year, that's fine. Maybe he wants that. Maybe he wants, you know, to not face Kevin De Bruyne every single season. Maybe he wants for this, like, you know, this anomaly in life to not be the barrier to him getting what he wants every season. That's absolutely fine. But, you know, I find this way of becoming overrated, which is a shame, because I use it pretty much in every sentence I say, but the narrative around every season he's had at Liverpool is so, so special. And I can't imagine that, what is he now, 30? From 24 to 30, they are all of our formative years. We all think of who we were when we were 24 compared to who we were when we were 30. They're the ones that matter. And I can't imagine that his career defined and the ones that made him a legend are going to be, you know, any difference. I always think this about, you know, the likes of like Ronaldo. Maybe it's just, you know, kind of because we're close to it, but even if he didn't come back to United, you'd always think of him in a United shirt, even though he went on to do brilliant things for Madrid and all that. So I can't see anything trumping this for the sheer magnitude and importance of it. I also don't think he's going to go and win Champions League, by the way. I think he might win the Bundesliga every season, but I don't think he's going to win anything more than he's won yet.
So just on that sort of the, I wonder whether or not, Mike, you know, when Thiago came here, it was very much framed as a new challenge. He's done the very same thing in a different way. And it very much felt like, you know, Thiago picked Liverpool as much as anything else in amongst this. It feels in this instance like Mane's picked Bayern. The only thing on this is I do wonder whether or not Mane's picked, a little bit of Siobhan's just characterised it, a slightly easier life. You know, there's fewer games where there'll be less physical punishment. It's fewer big games. I think it could be brilliant for the longevity of his career. You know, if Bayern get him on a five-year deal, he's 30 now. And we've seen in the past with Robert and with Ribery that Bayern can do this. They can take attackers who look as though they could be coming towards the end of their natural careers, but find a way to prolong that by another couple of years, because it isn't quite as intensive. You're not dealing with what you're dealing with, and at the other end of the table, you haven't got a Manchester City, you haven't got a Chelsea or even a Tottenham, arguably, to deal with in the Bundesliga if you're Bayern Munich. The intensity is lessened, which maybe means that Sadio can save it up for the big Champions League games.
Yeah, I think Manny ultimately is leaving the club for a footballing challenge. He wants a new footballing challenge. He's completed football at Liverpool, if you like. He's won every trophy there is to win. He's been on an amazing journey with us. He's played across the front three and played all those three positions to a really high level. And I think, yeah, he's well within his rights to, at 30 years of age, having won every trophy there is to win at Liverpool. He's well within his rights to be like, okay, I just want a new challenge. And it is a new challenge in a less intense environment. I'm sure he's aware of that. It's a challenge in a league that is nowhere near as tasking as Premier League. And it's a challenge that I'm sure he's going to relish. With the Austrian League, he played in the Austrian League, I think, for Salzburg. So there are some kind of similarities with that league and the German league in terms of maybe intensities, some of the tactical elements of both leagues as well. I know those leagues are quite linked. So I'm sure that there are a lot of reasons he wants to go, but I wish him the best. Like, I just think that there is a chance that he's going to have some special memories at Bayern Munich, and he's going to, you know, win Bundesliga. He will undoubtedly win a Bundesliga at Bayern Munich. He's going to have some special memories there, but he will always be Liverpool Sadio Mane. I do really believe that. I do think that the memories he's had at this club, what he's done, that 2019 calendar year where he arguably could win a Ballon d'Or that year, that's how good he is. You know, that's going to define his career, I feel. And I do really wish him the best of Bayern Munich and hope he has a wonderful time here. But to me and to everyone else, I'm sure he's always going to forever be known as Liverpool Sadio Mane.
Indeed. Let's be crystal clear. The most important thing that Sadio Mane will ever achieve in the Allianz Arena is turning Manuel Neuer and floating it into the far post all the way there. I don't care how many more games he plays in the Allianz Arena. He will never do anything better. He'll never do anything more significant. It will indeed be the greatest moment of his life. And if he's listening to this, thank you so much for doing that, Sadio. This is the path that you've chosen for yourself now. It is all downhill from here. Let's be crystal clear about that one. Let's really frame our own sense of genuine mortality. It may have been all downhill from there for me, Sadio, let alone for you, mate. That's the way in which it does work. This is Tour Live. It is the Anfield Wrap of a Friday. Looking forward to a weekend. Liverpool have signed Darwin Nunez. He is not, as far as I'm concerned. I think Darwin Nunez is the replacement for Mo Salah. I think that Luis Diaz is the replacement for Sadio Mane. I don't think about positions, think about functions. But Mo Salah will obviously be around for another season. We'll talk about that in a minute or two. But first, going back when Darwin Nunez was first mooted, we do lots of fantastic stuff on the Anfield Wrap. And Josh Sexton spoke to the excellent Jamie Farr, a Portuguese journalist. We put it out as a subscription show. Here is that conversation right now for you on Tour Live, if you're listening to this as a podcast.
This is a little special on Darwin Nunez. I'm Josh Sexton for the Anfield Wrap. We're going to be looking into more about the player. First of all, we're joined by Jamie Farr, who is a Portuguese football expert. So we should be perfectly placed to be able to tell us more about Darwin Nunez and a potential move to Liverpool. So Jamie, I guess from a Liverpool supporter perspective, we'll know a little bit about Nunez from the games that we played against Benfica earlier this season. But can you just tell us a little bit more about the sort of style of player that he is?
Yeah, he's. I'd say he's quite a unique kind of player from what I've seen of him in the sense of he's quite unpredictable in the sense of his sort of movement off the ball, but I would say in quite a positive way. He's quite difficult to track, and he's quite a stocky guy as well. So he's sort of quite strong in the air and on the ball, and certainly this season he's shown himself to be a much, you know, a better finisher than maybe he showed in the sort of first year or so with Benfica. He definitely improved a lot in that department, as is, you know, and his numbers back that up too. So He's got a little bit of everything, really.
He seems sort of more in the mould of a traditional number nine, I suppose you would say. I guess that's something that Liverpool haven't gone to before. Is that backed up by the way he plays? Is there sort of more to his game than just, you know, a sort of traditional number nine, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, I think he fits that bill. You know, he has occasionally been used on the wing this season even, and I think previously when he was in Spain. But I think his game and his attributes are definitely suited to a central striker. And yeah, as you say, I think Liverpool seem to have gone down that sort of non-conventional route with Firmino and Jota and people like that. So I think certainly compared to those two guys, I think he's definitely more of an archetypal central striker like that, and yeah, seemingly that seems to be part of his appeal for Liverpool.
And the goal record, of course, speaks for itself when you go and sort of look into Darwin Nunez's stats. But would you say there's more to his game, I suppose, than just the goals? You know, Liverpool strikers, as you sort of pointed out there, are expected to, you know, press well and you know, get assists and that kind of thing. And I suppose what I'm asking is, you know, is there more to just goals, more than just goals to Darwin Nunez's game?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think he likes to drop deep now and then and get involved with play, but more in terms of sort of quick layoffs rather than sort of, you know, really a full involvement in build-ups, if you like. So, you know, his instincts do always seem to be, you know, to get into the box and cause trouble there. So, yeah, I think he would probably, you know, he would have things to add to his game and probably things to learn still. You know, he's still pretty young. So, you know, I think he's not, you know, he's far from the finished product. But, I definitely see, you know, within what he's already got and shown that there's more. You know, he is capable of more.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Liverpool have lacked down the years, probably bar Divock Origi, really, is someone who they can sort of play the ball up to, who'd be able to hold it up a bit more. And that's something Liverpool fans have maybe wondered if, you know, at times, particularly as you're getting later into games that have been tough, whether we need a sort of bigger target to aim at. And you mentioned just the sort of physical stature of Darwin Nunez there. Is that a facet of his game? Is he able to, you know, hold the ball up? And would Liverpool, you know, if it was late in the game and they were chasing, be able to play like longer balls up to him and that kind of thing?
I think so. I wouldn't sort of, I probably wouldn't go as far to say, you know, a sort of traditional target man as such, but yeah, he's definitely shown he's capable in the air and he's quite a strong lad. And, you know, as I say, I think even in those senses, I think he'll only get better and improve in those kind of areas. But yeah, I definitely think as you mentioned, when you consider the profile of the various kind of attackers and how Liverpool have gone about it, from the outside looking in, it very much looks like he would be able to offer something different to what they've already got. So I think that's a big appeal of Darwin's.
And these reports of him becoming Liverpool's top target have sort of come out of the blue today, but we've heard, you know, Jurgen Klopp coming out in the past and speaking about him. I believe in one of his press conferences around the Benfica game, he described him as a good-looking boy and things like that. Is there much by way of suggestion of what his character is like off the pitch? Because that's become quite important for Liverpool, in particular with this group, but also for Liverpool fans to sort of have, you know, good characters in the dressing room and big characters in the dressing room. Does Darwin Nunez give any hint of, you know, what he's like off the pitch?
Difficult to say, really. But what one thing I would say is that I think something that was noticeable about him and his improvement this season is that I think as it went on, he sort of seemed to develop that swagger to suggest that he felt, you know, he looked and played like he, you know, almost knew he was one of the best players in the country. And it's an obvious example, but the very same thing I noticed with Luis Diaz is that they suddenly, you know, he just went up a certain level and prior to that, someone like Bruno Fernandes, it was the same sort of thing. You could sort of see that they suddenly went up a gear in terms of, you know, I guess what they felt they were capable of. So in that sense, I think, you know, I think Nunes has got the right attitude in the sense that, you know, his, it doesn't seem like the sort of character to kind of rest on his laurels and be happy with his lot. And he just, he seems ambitious and ready to take on those kind of next steps. So I would say that's a massive attribute, because it's not, you know, it's not a given. I've seen many players in Portugal who've been particularly talented, but maybe haven't quite grasped that kind of consistency or maybe even perhaps the drive and the ambition that I mentioned to kind of really push on. But he, like Diaz and like Fernandes, Nunes seems to have that kind of quality. So I can only imagine that's a factor and a big plus for Liverpool, because, as you say, you know, yeah, they do seem a sort of a particular type in terms of the personality, you know, that sort of hunger that seems to be a prerequisite. So he seems to have that quality for me.
And I suppose one of the concerns we'd have as Liverpool fans sort of looking at his injury record. He goes for knee surgery at the back end of last season, misses the sort of whole of summer. It's obviously not many games for Benfica in the end, but he's out for the whole that summer off the back of the knee surgery. Is his injury record something the Liverpool fans would have to be sort of mildly concerned about, at least?
Potentially, yeah. There was he has had a couple of issues, and one of those issues, you know, he kind of played through for quite a while with a sort of a niggly kind of problem, which sort of didn't massively hamper his form and return, which is a good sign. And I think there was an element of it just being a sort of an issue to correct rather than kind of a major problem. But yeah, it's obviously it'll be something to keep in mind, and you would hope any kind of medical might sort of alleviate such concerns. But I wouldn't say, you know, he's still very young as well, so I wouldn't say it's a massive concern. But especially as I say, as in terms of the form that he produced, it hasn't sort of seemed to bother him, and he's only gotten better. So I wouldn't say a huge cause for concern at this point.
And the reports coming out of the media in England today are suggesting a fee of around 85 million if Liverpool were to go and get Darwin Nunes. I suppose it's the conundrum you always have as fans when a big player is leaving the club, because I'd imagine, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Benfica fans would be sad to lose Darwin Nunes, but then equally recouping a big fee there, which allows them to go on and sort of, you know, keep implementing their transfer strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Benfica fans are as realistic as any in those kind of situations where the reality of the game at the moment is, you know, if you do pick up a player of that quality, he's not going to stick around for too long. That's just an inevitability, and the bigger teams and the bigger leagues will always you know, snap up these kind of players. So I think, as you mentioned with the fee, it's all about the right time and the right money and being able to just rebuild to an extent, or find the next Nunes, you know, that kind of thing. And always, as ever with these kind of deals, there'll be sell on and percentages going to, in this case, Almeria. So it's so imperative that they, you know, and agents' fees and all this kind of stuff. So it's so imperative that these fees are big enough in order to, you know, because Benfica's slice of that won't be 80 odd million or whatever. So they need to make sure the fee goes up and they get, you know, a good chunk of it, and they can start again. But it's an inevitability of these kind of things, but. The fees are obviously feel quite inflated, but again, I think that's just the way it is these days.
Yeah, I suppose it's the million-dollar question, Jamie. But from a personal perspective, in your sort of personal opinion, if Darwin Nunes were to sign for Liverpool, do you expect him to be a big success?
I think so, yeah. I guess it would depend, a lot on what's happening in terms of any outgoings for Liverpool, because, you know, that's obviously such a congested area of the team to get into. And as we've mentioned, you know, it's the team are quite, you know, more than capable and prone to playing wingers in attack and that sort of thing. So it's not a given, even signing someone for such a fee, that he would walk into the team. But I think the group seems to be, you know, such a talented group that is on the up. I think that's something that really helped Diaz settle in quickly. And yeah, I don't see why it would be impossible for him to make a similar impact as Diaz. You know, as ever, these cases are, it is all about settling, really, and that can always be a little bit of a lottery. But it seems like the environment in which he would potentially join is one of the best he could possibly do so. So I think he'd have all the tools to do really well. Yeah.
All right. Well, there's still probably some way to go in this deal by the sounds of it. But great to get more insight into Darwin Núñez there. So thank you to Jamie.
But if you were on YouTube, we're back, and we're back with the listeners of Tour Live as well. It was 1832-ish, that Andy, as far as I'm concerned. That is the way in which it works here. It is a pleasure to have 1833, says Andy, on the private chat. Marvellous stuff, Andy. It is a pleasure to be with you on this Friday afternoon. Liverpool, a couple of days ago, Mike, yesterday it was announced that through the journalists who cover Liverpool on the patch that Liverpool's transfer business in terms of incomings will be over once Calvin Ramsey is confirmed. He's not in yet, but it looks as though that will be happening. Obviously, Mane on the way out. There's a couple of others linked as being on the way out. What's really interesting to me is I'm not sure if I entirely believe that if Liverpool were to sell one of the two midfielders, who they may sell. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita have both got 1 year left on the deal. I think if Liverpool don't get an offer they like for Chamberlain, they may well feel the need to keep hold of him, and then they may not decide to replace. I think with Naby Keita, they probably do need to find an answer to a new contract. And Paul Gorse this week said to me, on tour player, that he feels that Liverpool will get a new contract agreed with Naby Keita over the course of the summer, but they could be tempted there. I think if either of those two move, there's a chance Liverpool do go in for another midfielder. If neither move, if both stay, Chamberlain seeing his contract out and Keita getting a new deal, are you happy with Liverpool's business?
I personally would just want one more body in midfield. I feel like...
You'd want nine midfielders. I'm going to ask you a lot of moody questions here, Mike. Be ready.
So the issue we have in midfield isn't numbers, it's terms of the reliability of some of the personnel within those numbers. So when you look at our midfield options, if we were to have... We have eight right now. Chamberlain's susceptible to knocks. Thiago's susceptible to knocks. Henderson's susceptible to knocks. Keita, the list goes on. There are loads of midfielders within that list who are susceptible to knocks. And I feel one of the issues with our midfielders is we lack a particular profile of midfielder, and one that I feel would elevate the ceiling of our midfield quite significantly. And I feel like we miss a really dynamic and powerful midfielder who's also quite adept technically. Henderson used to be that. I don't think Henderson's quite as dynamic athletically as he once was. He still is obviously a very good midfielder. But I do think it will benefit us in a few games to really have a kind of powerful box-to-box midfielder who could do bits in both boxes. I feel like that's what we lack in midfield. And Tchouaméni was one we identified. And look, people, the club have put the message out of, we're happy to wait till next year. And a lot of fans got upset with that, saying, you know, the club has shown no ambition, yada, yada, yada. I do think it's a calculated risk the club would take if they do wait a year. They said the same thing last summer. But I think it's clear that the club have a particular list of midfielders that they feel are of the calibre required to elevate us in that particular position. So it was Tchouaméni, and it looks like it's going to be Jude Bellingham as well. We always commend Liverpool's transfer business as being amazing. We always sign players who have an instant impact. Part of the reason for it is because the club wait until the right one's available. They wait until the right player is available. So I do think it would be a risk to go into the season if Oxlade-Chamberlain was to move on, for example. I think it'd be a real risk to not add a body into that mix.
I agree with that, Mike. I'll stay with you for a second. I agree with that. If anyone moves, if any of them were to move on, I would want to add another one, because you can see we've looked at the fixtures. We know what it's going to look like. We know how intense it's going to be in the first half of the season. The second half seems actually quite interesting. There's a bit more leeway, I think, in the second half of the season. But the first half of the season, it is going to be really, really intense. So I agree if Chamberlain moves on. I think it becomes, where it becomes difficult is if no one moves on. I totally get the idea of a series of insurance policies, but you can sort of drive yourself mad and you can probably only pick three of them. So if you end up with nine, that is every match day six not being involved from the outset. It's probably at least one not making the bench, if not two not making the bench. And that's where I think things can get a little bit difficult. But the flip side is, if the worst happens, you obviously end up saying, you know, you can never, there'll be some moments in the season where you'll be a bit like, oh, I wish we had another centre mid.
Yeah, you can never have too many good centre mids, right, is my thing. I just feel like we lack a particular profile of midfielder that would elevate the ceiling of the midfield and the way it operates. And again, I just think there are some midfielders within that sort of area that we can't rely on in terms of physicality. And also, I don't want us to play as often. I don't think Henderson should play anywhere near as many games he did last season. Not because I don't think Henderson's a good player, but because I feel like we would get a better version of Henderson if he's managed, if his games are picked and his minutes are managed. So I take your point. Nine might be too many. Maybe actually the idea is that you sell Chamberlain, you get one in, and then you get another one in next season. So actually you get two in, you get two out. So probably Chamberlain out this summer, Milner out next summer. That's probably how I would like to see the club do it.
Getting them out is often difficult, Neil. It might be that Liverpool agree with what Mike's just said. I think that is the tension that's at the heart of this. But that's also why I don't necessarily sort of accept that it is the end. I could be wrong, but I wonder if Liverpool is sort of sending a little bit of a message like, we're happy just to go. If they're getting offers for Chamberlain they don't like, or offers for someone else they don't like, and their attitude might be, well, we're happy just to go, we'll go with this. That could be what they are trying to sort of send out through the journalists who cover Liverpool on a regular basis. And as Mike says, the other thing we know about this Liverpool setup is they are so patient. I think at times they manage to, no matter how many times they prove their patience to be correct, they manage to do the heads in of their own supporters.
Yeah, they have time and time again. They've done my head in with the Lovren replacement. And then, you know, we've obviously got a fabulous centre-half now in Konate. I banged the drum for a very long time. I wasn't really happy with Wijnaldum leaving. I think I agree with a lot of what Mike said. I thought in some ways he's describing the player that Wijnaldum used to be, you know, so energetic, so much strength and so much technical ability on the ball, his ability to keep the ball. I can understand why with the, you know, the contract situation, we did let Wijnaldum go. But I felt last season at times we missed him. We lacked him, a player of his ability. Certainly in the first half of the season, there was a lot of games where I felt we didn't hold onto the ball well enough at times. We were a bit rash. We let leads slip in a number of league games that resulted in draws in Europe. Sometimes we got away with it, Milan, Atletico away. But I didn't think we always had the control that Wijnaldum gave us in the middle of the park. And then, as you say, you will get situations where there's a few injuries. So we went to, was it Chelsea in January, with a real makeshift midfield that I don't think any of us would have expected to be a midfield away at Stamford Bridge in 2022. I think Milner started, similar to the game against City at home, where Curtis Jones was thrown into the massive head-to-head with City. And obviously those games against City and Chelsea were just colossal, weren't they? Colossal matches, the points that really would have decided the title if we could have got over the line in you know, one, at least one of those four fixtures. So I feel we are missing a player of that profile too. I do take your point, it's difficult. When Elliot came into the squad, I think a lot of us saw him as a front three player and not necessarily as a member of the midfield makeup. So that was a surprise. So we do have more cover there than I anticipate. But I'm hoping too, as I think Craig Hannon said, I'm hoping that perhaps the message they're putting out through the local press, through the contacts, is a message that's part of a wider negotiating position with perhaps looking to move Chamberlain on. I'd like to see Keita stay. He had his best season for us in terms of fitness. For me, he's one of our top four midfielders. I think he should be, you know, rewarded with a new contract. I don't think Naby is an issue.
To make a minor point, against Leicester and against Chelsea at Christmas, Naby Keita starts from the bench and is brought on in both games. So he was available for selection in both of those matches, and the manager chose not to go with him for one reason or another. I think that this is where this, for me, Neil, before I bring Siobhan in, and I'll just sort of do your head in a bit first, this is where I think at times this is a little, you know, what I think is a little bit tricky is that the manager himself does have a great deal of agency around a lot of these things, and he seems to at times prefer a different type of profile for this Liverpool team in this Liverpool moment. And I think he is also the one who does not want to be overstocked in any position. You know, he's also the one who's risk averse around his players. I was actually talking to Rafa Honigstein for a different project at the weekend on Monday. And one of the things he was saying was that right the way back when he was at Mainz, they would speak to players who were potential signings for Mainz. And those players would think they were trying to talk the Mainz player into signing for the potential Mainz player into signing for Mainz. And actually what was happening was Jürgen and his director of football at Mainz were actually working out whether or not they wanted this fella to be part of their thing. And I think that I think we've got to be careful, haven't we, at times, that I ultimately think this is sort of what the manager wants, much of it. And that's, he commits to his boys, and you know, no manager is perfect if you don't like that, because I think there's a strengths and weaknesses thing here, and part of what I think he does is he does commit to his lads.
Yeah, I don't think it's all down to big bad FSG. I think I've moved on from that way of thinking. I do think that you're right. Jürgen obviously is the main voice in this. He obviously sees massive Elliot and was confident in what he could bring to the squad at the start of the season. Curtis too, you know, sometimes you'll see fans suggesting that Curtis might benefit from a year on loan. I don't think that's anywhere near Jürgen Klopp's thoughts. It doesn't feel that way to me. Around Christmas time, I remember there being criticism of Jürgen because I think Naby had some good games. I can't remember, did he play well in the League Cup game against Leicester?
So he comes out in the League Cup game against Leicester, looks great.
And then he doesn't start the league game against Leicester,
and then he doesn't start the game against Chelsea. So, literally, he sat on the bench for all of these games. He's sat on the bench all the way through all of those matches. And he's about to go off to AFCON as well. So this stuff's happening, and he's not selecting him.
Yeah, and I remember Jürgen getting some pelters for that at the time, and I was frustrated by it. The only thing is, you never quite know with Naby whether is his fitness being managed.
Yeah,
because there's always that sense that an injury is around the corner, and that's just always been my concern with the current stock of midfield that we've got, is that there's some fabulous talent there, but we all know the injury issues of the main men, and I don't want to find ourselves in a position where Thiago's out, Henderson's out, Naby's got a strain, you know. I just don't think if we're going into head-to-head clashes with our main rivals domestically or on the continent, that's really a top-tier midfield for a side that's as good as we are in every other position.
I think a lot of the conversation around this, Siobhan, I think it's quite psychologically interesting from a Liverpool point of view. Neil and Mike have just spoken at length, but, you know, I found it was mostly engaging. About a team that's just played every single football match it's possible to play, got 92 points, made every final and won 2 trophies. And yet in the back of everyone's mind, and I wonder if it's marked by years of underachievement. I wonder whether or not it's in part because of the issues at centre-back that we had in the COVID season. There is always this idea that Liverpool will be left short of footballers, no matter how many times they prove that isn't the case, no matter how many times Jürgen Klopp pulls it all out the bag. I find it interesting, without getting into head case territory or the territory of where this conversation is marked out by head cases, I think that there does seem to be a rumbling mini fear that I think underpins a lot of Liverpool conversation around strength and depth in terms of the squad.
It's really, as you rightly pointed out, after the season they just had every game, three finals, taking it to the last 15 minutes. It's really hard to pull out anything as a real weakness and something that is like got to fundamentally change until we'll get better, because it was such fine margins all season. What I think is that there was moments of a hint of desperation about some of the battles in midfield in particular that maybe make you feel that we've got our three main lads who we like to see play together. But I get the sense, and I don't technically get this sense, as you said, it's more of a psychological thing, that the drop-off then is quite vast because of the fringe elements of some players, the age of some players, the inexperience of changing that up a little bit. But with the season we're about to face, whoever comes in, you're not going to see your three main lads in every single league game. So I think everyone's just got to get on board with the fact that whether you like it or not, whether someone else comes in or not, there is so much sight. This is the most... We can't not get into head case territory, unfortunately, because this is everyone enjoys this as the leisure activity it's meant to be. And, like, you know, there's a formula for what it looks like when it's good and what it looks like when it's bad. This season is going to be so alien to anything else that we've seen in terms of the makeup of it, that it's going to be the most scientific season we've ever seen in terms of, you know, people's levels and where people can go and who can play with who and things like that. None of us have got a fucking clue what's going to happen. And swapping one slightly not great, you know, not the best lads for a better lad would be amazing. But as Neil said, we've got 9. 4 of them were, like, yeah, nailed on. The rest are bit part players. Yeah, it is an interesting one, because how can you possibly suggest that there is any massive weakness in this team at the moment? Because there quite clearly isn't. But full circle on these things, can't you?
Just on that, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but my paranoia definitely does play a massive part of my Liverpool experience.
So many people's, Neil, genuinely, I'm not being trite about it. A lot of people have exist in this space of it's all about to go so badly wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And I do often have that feeling, and I feel that in life a lot of the time. but with Liverpool particularly, it's the fact that Jurgen is so fabulous. He's such a fantastic manager. We've got such a great squad. And maybe if Manchester City weren't around, I wouldn't be sitting here saying this. But for me, it's just that always that fear that at one point Jurgen won't be here. And I want him to have every possible resource at his disposal while he is here, so that we're sat here in 4 years' time and he's on 3 league titles and 3 European Cups, like, minimum. That's what I want from this era. I want this to be the all-conquering, incredible Jurgen Klopp.
Let's just scratch that for a scratch the surface of that for a little second. Look at me offering therapy for just nothing. why is that not going to happen? Like, why is that not going to happen? Is it because you're worried about what other people are going to reflect on a period of greatness on, or what we all feel about it? Because we all feel that it's marvellous and it's going to be amazing.
Perhaps I'm influenced by outside voices more than I should be, but then I'm also influenced by, you know, I want another league title parade. I want us to win the league and me to be in the ground. That's basically my one remaining ambition in life.
That's really fair, but I will sort of come back around onto your point about it, Neil, is in a strange way, though, the side who have been able to financially dope themselves, even they haven't managed to reach the point of the dynasty. Everyone talks about the dynasty as though the dynasty is in some way possible, whereas they haven't had the dynasty because they haven't had any of the European success at all at this point. And, you know, Manchester City may win one of the next 3 European Cups, they may not, but I don't see them winning more than one of them because of the way this stuff works. They have got the 4 league titles in 5 years, and my God, that's amazing. But even they, with all the resource, with the, you know, the man who is styled and I think probably is the best coach of elite footballers in the world. And I love our manager, but I think our manager is a different value proposition in a couple of ways to their manager. And I'd rather have our one than their one, to be really, really clear. But when people refer to Guardiola in that way, I think there's a lot of fairness to it. They've got that, but they haven't got the dynasty. They've got the league. They've had a form of league dominance, don't get me wrong. And I think this is the problem. I think in our minds, we all think that there's a route to a Bob Paisley-esque 6 leagues, 3 European Cups in 9 seasons for Liverpool. And I just don't think that's necessarily possible. But everyone still thinks, no, there'll be some sort of magic formula and then bang, there's the dynasty. Steve in the comments, I like it, by the way, never forget the kickoff when we didn't spend 50 million on that Saul lad last summer, is genuinely, like, I think it's a really good one to remember. The lads played less for Chelsea than I did last season. And yet we end up in this realm where I think everyone thinks, or a lot of people think, there is some sort of little pathway that will get us, you know, that there is a cheat code out there somewhere.
We have thwarted each other to an extent as well, Man City and Liverpool. This is what sport's all about, really, is great rivalry, isn't it? But I don't know if I would be happier if City just didn't exist and we just won everything. And there was no great rivalry and there was no great story. And it was just the Liverpool era.
No ups, no downs.
That trophy parade and being in the ground, it would have just been like being there, done that now by now, wouldn't it? We're in pursuit of the promise, aren't we? And that's what it is.
I think the flip side is, Siobhan, I think we'd have had a lovely time.
Yeah.
I think we'd have enjoyed ourselves.
That few minutes where we thought it might be happening a few weeks ago, I mean, that would have been nice.
It would have been, and I think that's the thing. And in the comments, someone else has also said, Mike, that, you know, Jurgen wants Bellingham and he's prepared to wait. And I'm also prepared to wait for Bellingham. But I do agree, you know, if you want my overall view is your starting point. I think I do agree that, for instance, I'm not averse to the idea of Chamberlain moving on and someone else coming in, especially someone who's physically reliable. I think that would be no bad thing. But my point there ends up being this manager also loves a redemption arc. You know, it doesn't feel ridiculous to think that Chamberlain may have another part to play in some way, shape or form for another Liverpool team. There's been players who've dipped out and Chamberlain does contribute last season. He gets those goals in January. For me, the problem with Chamberlain felt like he was on his own back far too much a lot of the time. But I think they could all have a role to play. Elliot another year older, Jones another year older. I'm not averse to a little bit of Harvey Elliott against Man United second away game of the season. You know, Neil's there saying you don't want some of them in big games. If you saw that team sheet and I had Harvey on playing centre mid, you'd think, oh, he's going to take United to the cleanest today. You know, this is the journey. This is the fun.
I think one of the things the manager's always been like, he's always emphasised, is how we can always make marginal gains on the training ground and within the squad. He's been keen on that since day one. He's a trainer. He's a coach. He's someone who likes to improve the players he already has. And I think if we don't sell Chamberlain, if we don't sign another midfielder, I think the manager's confident that he can get enough out of the current group he has, especially players who've been on the fringes of things or didn't play as much due to injury. I'm thinking of Elliot, I'm thinking of Jones, and I'm thinking of Chamberlain. I think he can get a lot out of those players and make the marginal gains required. And ultimately, going into next season, continuity is something that I think we've spoken about in the Anfield Wrap. Continuity is going to be really, really important for next season. You probably don't want too much change. The pre-season starts in a few weeks' time. We've got a Community Shield on the 29th of July. The season starts on the 6th of August. That's not a lot of time to maybe bed a new midfielder in. So the manager might see it as, okay, we're going to stick with the lads we have here. We're going to get more games out of Harvey Elliott, out of Curtis Jones, out of Oxlade Chamberlain in midfield. And we're going to go from there. We're going to have our core of midfielders, our core reliable midfielders, Fabinho, Thiago. These are the ones that are going to play most big games for us. And then these guys in the fringes, we're going to hope they contribute more. That could be a way home for us. And I think, as you and Siobhan both said, this is a team that got 92 points last season. It's a team that reached three finals and won two of them. This is not like a team that's in crisis mode or anything like that. So there shouldn't be any panic if we don't sign a new midfielder and if we go into the season with these nine lads. There are ways we can make marginal gains. There always are ways we can make marginal gains. We're going to see more of Luis Diaz next season. We're going to see more of Konate next season. So there is no reason to panic. But having said all that, I do still think that if we were to sign a midfielder, move Chamberlain on, I do think a midfielder who's physically imposing, technically gifted, would really raise the ceiling of this side. I think of the game we played against Man City at the Etihad, and De Bruyne was marvellous that day. And one of the things that stood out to me about De Bruyne was just how physically imposing he is, but also technically how gifted he is. And listen, I'm not saying we can sign him next Kevin De Bruyne. I'm not
mad how fast he is. It's mad.
It's honestly so mad.
Like people should talk more about the fact that he's dead fast. On top of everything else, he's dead fast.
He's honestly the closest thing I've seen to Steven Gerrard in terms of physicality of him and the blend of physicality and technique. And I don't think we can sign a Kevin De Bruyne, but someone with that skill set who's not as good but can still contribute for Liverpool would be amazing, I feel.
Isn't it funny the language we use to describe certain footballers as opposed to others? De Bruyne has never talked about, you know, he's a monster, isn't he?
Yes, physically he's an incredible monster.
But because he's got a wand of a foot and he's blonde and he's from Belgium, we don't really talk about him in the same way that we would. I think the Gerrard comparison is spot on. He's so dominant.
Absolutely. But Liverpool got themselves very, very close to pipping Manchester City for the title, and Kevin De Bruyne has never lifted a European Cup. It's something you might want to think about, spend some time contemplating, see if you can pull that off. It'd be nice if you could find a way to do so. It's been a pleasure. I've very much enjoyed this show. Try not to be scared. You just played 19 months, 16, drew three. You know, got to won two cups and got to the final of another one. You know, they're, don't be scared. They know what they're about. They know where they are. They're going to be all right, the boys. They are all tremendous. Excellent stuff in the comments there. De Bruyne is blonde, but spiritually he's ginger. Tremendous stuff. Absolutely tremendous stuff. It is a pleasure to be part of this show today. Do download the app. Do enjoy all the little bits and pieces that you can. It's been terrific with Siobhan, with Neil, with Mike, Jamie Ford and Josh Sexton in the middle of it as well. Andy Heaton producing. It has been your tour live. Don't be scared. The Reds are absolutely fine. See you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.